From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, the sleeping prophet, Edgar Cayce. Happy birthday, by the way, to Coast listener John Lamoureux. Have a great one, John. Here's what's happening. President Trump said it's looking like Iran was responsible for weekend attacks on Saudi Arabia's oil supply and talked up the United States military might, he said. But he wanted to avoid a war. Iran has denied involvement in the attacks, which came as tensions rise over Iran's unraveling of its nuke deal with world powers. Yemen's Iran-backed Houthi rebels said they launched drone attacks on the world's largest oil processing facility in Saudi Arabia and a major oil field on Saturday, shutting down about 50% of Saudi Arabia's oil output. Huge fires. The attacks marked the latest of many drone assaults on the kingdom's oil infrastructure in recent weeks. I was at an afterlife conference in Scottsdale this weekend and made this announcement to the crowd who had not heard of it, and you should have heard the crowd just aghast. Dr. Jerome Corsi from CorsiNation.com with us. Jerry, I got to ask you a couple questions as we get into this. One, we don't know if they were drones or missiles, correct?
Increasing evidence, George, is that there were cruise missiles involved as well as drones in the attack. And Yemen, the Houthi rebels are to the south of Saudi Arabia, and Iran, of course, to the north. And I think it's increasing evidence, again, that Iran was involved.
Well, if Iran was involved, what happens next? Does Saudi Arabia attack? Do we attack? I mean, the president has tweeted we're locked and loaded, ready to go.
Well, I think the United States is, of course, capable of responding, but listening very carefully to President Trump's remarks today, both in the Oval Office and when he was leaving to go to a rally in Albuquerque, it's pretty clear I think the president wants Saudi Arabia to take the lead in the response. And if there is a military response, I think Saudi Arabia will take the lead. We'll support Saudi Arabia, but I doubt we will lead a military response against Iran.
Jerry, why would Iran be so foolish to do anything like this or even be involved in this, knowing what the ramifications could be?
Well, I think, George, Iran's increasingly squeezed by the sanctions economically, and internally this could, you know, lead to a popular uprising against the mullahs, the religious minority that have controlled Iran for decades since 1979. Ayatollah Khomeini took over with a radical revolution. So basically, Iran's in a very delicate position. Iran right now could be facing real economic hardship. And increasingly, Iran's only alternative is to cause trouble, to try to create a war, to create a situation in which the Middle East could be inflamed in another war, leading to possibly a global war, with the prospect that the Europeans and others will want to appease Iran. But I don't think with President Trump in office that's going to happen.
If Iran did this, what do you think they'd do if they had nukes?
Well, that's really the problem, George, is if Iran had nukes, I've said since I wrote Atomic Iran in 2005 that terrorists do not basically warehouse nuclear weapons or any weapons they have. They use them. And I think Iran has been pushing for this kind of trouble and this kind of destabilization in the Middle East. Right now, Iran has been a major force with Hezbollah in Lebanon, with supporting Hamas, which are Sunni Muslims, Iran's Shiite. But again, Hamas has been supported by Iran. Iran's worked in Syria to destabilize Syria. Iran's been a destabilizing force in the Middle East. But, George, I don't think a war is a solution here.
No, I don't either. Now, can we rule out a false flag, Jerry, that some other nation or a rogue group did this to get us involved in something?
I think we can at this point, George, because Iran has been stepping up the pressure. They've also recently, again, hijacked another ship in the Straits of Hormuz. I think Iran is clearly behind the intensification of violence right now in the Middle East. But I don't know that it's going to lead to necessarily a war. I think we've got the United Nations meeting next week. So Iran's going to be saying, well, if you want more oil worldwide, we can supply it. It's like, you know, appease us, please. I don't think that's going to be the solution. I think it's a losing strategy right now for Iran. And Saudi Arabia, I think, is positioned to do a retaliation, which could include a military strike on Iran's oil field.
That could happen. Jerry's book, of course, Atomic Iran, so he knows what he's talking about. Jerry, thank you. Let's keep in touch, okay?
Thank you, George.
Jerry Corsi, his website, CorsiNation.com, part of our Twitter feed at CoastToCoastAM.com. I still think something's going to happen, some kind of big response from Saudi Arabia, maybe the United States. We shall see. General Motors says its offer to the United Auto Workers builds a stronger future for all, but the roughly 50,000 members on strike want more after walking out Sunday night. Talks between the union and GM were tense from the start, largely because General Motors plans to close four U.S. factories, including one on the Detroit border with the enclave of Hamtramck and Lordstown, Ohio, as well. Not a good time to strike. We shall see what happens there. Manhattan District Attorney Cyrus Vance Jr.'s office has subpoenaed tax returns belonging to President Trump and the Trump Organization through their accounting firm. He wants 8 years worth. The 10-year-old girl who was on life support after contracting a brain-eating amoeba while swimming in a Texas river has died, according to her family. Purdue Pharma, we were talking about that with attorney Jonathan Emord last week, the drug manufacturer accused of triggering the nation's epidemic of opioid addiction through its sale of the profitable but highly addictive painkillers, has now filed for bankruptcy. Rod Stewart is revealing that for years he's waged a secret battle with prostate cancer. He's fighting it. He's winning. He's 74 years old.
Shake it up. Shake it up. Shake it up.
Ron Ocasek, lead singer of the new wave rock band The Cars, has died of heart disease. He was 75. The Cars became hugely popular in the 1970s and 80s with these hits, and he is gone at the age of 75. Eddie Money, two tickets to Paradise singer, is dead at the age of 70. He had cancer of the esophagus. Coast to Coast, great guest, has just had a stroke. He seems to be getting better. Lauren Coleman, the cryptozoologist, he is recovering from that stroke and has taken himself out of interviews for a while and till he can heal up. Get better, Lauren. Our prayers go to you. The ozone hole over Antarctica this year, that's the South Pole, could be one of the smallest seen in three decades. Observations of the gas depletion high in the atmosphere demonstrate that it hasn't opened up in 2019 in the way it normally does. That's good news. Steve Cates, Dr. Sky, is with us, and I was with him in Scottsdale at the Soul Summit Conference. Did you have a good time there, Stephen?
Oh, George, that was great, meeting all new friends and get to see you and Tom. It's always a pleasure, my friend.
Super. What do you have for us this week, Steve?
Well, we begin with astronomy, George. A new object discovered on August the 30th by Ukrainian astronomer Gennady Borisov may be actually the second interstellar object, George, ever detected. This one, something exciting in astronomy, is known as C, for comet, that's what we think, 2019 Q4. The object, as I mentioned before, may be an interstellar comet. But the first interstellar object, George, was something that we've talked about on this show many times before. The interstellar so-called asteroid Oumuamua, officially designated as 1I Oumuamua, that possible object, or that object, actually came from the Vega star system, which passed the Earth back in 2017 on its way out. But this time, we have plenty of time, George, to learn about the nature of this visitor and this potential comet as it passes Mars in the month of October. But for the audience, George, what makes an interstellar object is simply this. Its high eccentricity orbit, which we call a hyperbolic orbit. The object is traveling now some 91,000 miles an hour and will get faster. If you're interested in asteroids, and who isn't, the next close approach of a potentially hazardous asteroid is going to happen, George, on September the 26th. The asteroid, a little one, maybe about 25 meters across, is known as 27 KP27. It will pass the Earth by a safe distance of about 1 million miles. And, George, that amazing moon, how about that harvest moon?
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Absolutely fantastic. We'll not see another one of those for about another 30 years on Friday the 13th. And for all the moon watchers, simply, George, the moon wanes, meaning obviously it's seeing less sunlight, and it shrinks down to new. So toward the end of the month, by September the 28th, a great time to welcome in the new fall skies with hopefully super dark skies. Dr. Sky reminds everyone to always remember to keep their eyes to the skies. Email me always. If you've got questions, we've got answers. It's just drskyshow@gmail.com. And always check out this great website, a great research and resource tool, wikisky.org. George, always a pleasure to see you guys, and hopefully we'll do it again soon.
You got it. Thanks. Stephen Cates, Dr. Sky. Well, they call him Dr. Doom, Major Ed Dames, the remote viewer, and he is next with us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, and one of our favorite guests, the world's foremost remote viewer and teacher, Edward Dames, Major U.S. Army, retired, decorated military intelligence officer, the original member of the U.S. Army Prototype Remote Viewing Training Program. He served as the training and operations officer for the Defense Intelligence Agency's Psychic Intelligence Collection Unit. And he serves as the executive director of the Matrix Intelligence Agency, which is a private consulting group. Ed, welcome back, my friend.
Oh, thank you. And I'm on the tail end of walking pneumonia, so forgive me if I'm so animated tonight.
Well,
and I just hit the big 7-0-2, so I'm chewing my nails. Mortality is showing its ugly face.
I know, listening to these rock stars who have passed on at 70, 75 and stuff like that. Take care with this pneumonia. When did that hit you?
I was on a short vacation in Ukraine, and I came back. I was sitting next to a Yemeni couple, and she was in full burqa, head to toe.
Yeah.
And I was talking with her, but I think, and she just escaped the war in the South. And they were holed up in Aden. She's American. They're both American citizens, and the ambassador got them out finally. But they were sick, so I probably got it from them.
So speaking of Yemen, there's this accusations that the Houthi rebels there may have been the ones to launch either drones or cruise missiles against these Saudi oil fields. I know it's probably too soon, but can you remote view something like that?
Yes, it's actually right by the book. The way that I would do it as an operations officer is to take, because there's photographs in the after-action reports, I would take one of the oil storage tanks that got hit, and then I would use that as target reference material, and I would track back the projectile to its source, the source either being a drone or on-the-ground launch. Then I would track that back to its origin.
Uh-huh.
Where it was actually provided from, and that would be the owners right there. And I could do more work, but it's really cut and dry, something like that. Rather, I don't speculate in things like this either.
How long would it take to do something like that, Major?
Probably a week.
Okay. But by the way, I've been getting lots of emails from your organization. You've been working with a lot of law enforcement trying to pinpoint various subjects and issues, haven't you?
Well, mostly something I don't talk about on the air, and that's missing and murdered children and
yes.
child murderers. So, but I really don't discuss that on the air. But I do CC you on my reports to law enforcement.
Okay. All right. So that's how I'm getting those. I wanted to ask you about that, and we'll keep it confidential. But you're providing a great service.
Thank
you. You really are. So what's new with you? What else is new other than the pneumonia?
Well, just anecdotally, in terms of action, I started to remote view. I mean, I really smelled a rat with the Jeffrey Epstein case. So I wanted to remote view his location to determine whether he's dead or alive, and then his murderer. And I thought, gee, you know, I'm going to spend a week on this. Why? Because I'll just be wasting my time. It's just another one of those things where, you know, the deep state has it under control, and they own the media, so why should I do that? On my last appearance on your show, I said I was going to go and on a Sasquatch expedition, but I got overcome by events this year, and I was going to go last week, but the pneumonia got me.
Right.
So I'm hoping to be able to get to that point. I'll talk a lot about this before the end of September. Otherwise, I have to use snowshoes. But I wanted to mention one thing about this this asteroid. It's actually, they don't know if it's an asteroid yet, but I think it is. This
the one with a strange name.
God of Chaos, Apophis.
Yeah.
That darn thing is 1,000 feet wide, and in 2029, it's supposed to pass 19,000 feet from the surface of the Earth.
And 19,000 feet or miles?
I'm sorry, 19,000 miles.
Phew! You know, that's still close.
We have a lot of satellites parked at 22.3.
Yeah.
So it's coming in inside of that band of satellites.
Right.
And I thought, wow, this is it, because, as I've often mentioned, vis-a-vis the kill shot, it's concomitant with, or rather the passing of a large celestial space body is concomitant with or facilitates, initiates the kill shot sequence. So, and we haven't seen this thing at all. And now, all of a sudden, they're talking about this. So I'm not saying it'll be that long, 10 years away, but that guy is a really good candidate for this sequence of events.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah, I recapitulated all of the behind-closed-doors stuff, for how people can find their own sanctuaries. I do a lot of client work in there, and where or where not to live and to move. Most of my clients have, about 80% of them have already relocated to these safer areas. So I put everything together in a couple of DVDs called Prepping for the Kill Shot. That link is, Lex has that up on your website too. So people, you know, I don't have to get asked over and over again to say the same thing. And I wanted to give you, since I haven't gone up there yet, and will soon, I wanted to give you and your listeners really a thorough background without getting into technicalities about my Starman project.
Yeah, it's called Project Starman, and that has to do with the Sasquatch investigation, right?
Actually, Starman is divided into two things. Zardoz, which is a actual contact with, and I will tell you what I mean by with in a minute, and Imago, which is strictly focusing on Sasquatch, those two areas. And the first contact that we had was... Just before I retired from the Army, I was using the military remote viewers to look at potential contact site. And we didn't have geofix in those days. We had to rely upon a description of the area.
And that's right.
And all the viewers and myself were describing an arid place somewhere in the U.S. Southwest. But that's a big area. Except for Mel Riley. Mel Riley had a picture-perfect drawing of a very unique structure, a D-shaped structure, which didn't take me long to identify. And that particular structure, Lex Lonehood put a photo of that on the Coast to Coast website.
Mm-hmm.
That is the largest mm-hmm. structure in Chaco Canyon, New Mexico. It's called Pueblo Bonito. So that's when the trip started, both myself alone, then as outside observers from Congress and other places like that, and then finally a scientific expedition, two of them sponsored by the Crown Prince of Liechtenstein. So the events that happened there on our first trip was the very large event was a huge green fireball that came straight down into a mesa to the north of Pueblo Alto. Pueblo Alto is just on the mesa above that structure that you see in the photo. And lots of other anomalies happened to our observation team there, but that green fireball was unique because just prior to Project Blue Book's synopsis, that those fireballs were appearing, Russia as well, were appearing all throughout the U.S. Southwest test sites, nuclear test sites, and secret sites. And they became, in the minds of a couple of these famous scientists who researched it, the only candidate of all the UFO sightings that they investigated, the only candidate that appeared to be under intelligent control. So this was a big positive outcome.
All right, hold on, Ed. We'll talk more about this, your Sasquatch work. We'll talk about other issues, too, what's going on at the New Madrid Fault, which goes right by St. Louis, and so much more with Major Ed Dames on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Major Ed Dames with us, Dr. Doom. They still call you Dr. Doom, don't they?
Occasionally, yeah.
I know you don't like that, but it is what it is. With these Project Starman, what are you trying to prove, Ed, or see with the Sasquatch program?
I'm going to tell you. I'm going to put everything, lay it out as simply as I can. Before I go on, I'd like to mention a book that I like very much. I'm a minimalist. I only keep like 20 books at any given time. Really, if I buy another one, one has to go off the shelf. That's what minimalism is all about. The book is written by E. Andrew Boyd, a PhD in applied mathematics. It's called Beyond Comprehension, a scientific look at the challenge of knowing everything. And in the first part of the book, a very, very interesting chapter, he describes how dogs do not comprehend the concept of the number 10. And he extends the idea analogously to humans. If humans are also mammals, perhaps the things that the human things that are beyond our comprehension as well. I'm going to have to agree with that after all the years of research on the ET phenomenon, so-called. Now, that first observation with those green fireballs, and that project was called Project Twinkle. Your listeners can look it up.
Twinkle.
It was very, very extensively studied prior to Blue Book. And it petered out. Those things stopped happening, and we have a good idea why that is, but I don't want to go into that at the moment. So anyway, and I've taken Jacques Vallée out to the site, that site as well, too, in circa 1991-92. But when I came back, I had already hired, I was setting up a civilian company, I recently retired, and I hired all of the remote viewers, even though I had gone on to a very, very dark unit before I retired. I had already hired all of the remote viewers, almost all, in the unit to work for me, to moonlight on my projects. And predominantly all of those, were, except for corporate clients, those were UFO, ET types of stuff. But I want to read, if I may, a summary that Paul Smith wrote when I came back, because he did not go out in the field with us, and I paid Paul to remote view exactly what happened out there, because we're constrained, our eyeballs are constrained, we're bandwidth limited in terms of
the
light spectra and temporal limited in terms of things that we can process, how fast, that kind of stuff. I all my students know this well. May I read the summary about that?
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, here it goes. Paul wrote this on the 4th of June, 1990. And this is vis-a-vis that fireball and one other thing. After the fireball, I shined the laser pointer at the mesa into which the fireball disappeared, and a light shined back that was the same color, green in this case, and then it went out. Here's Paul's summary. He wasn't there. Sight involves a semi-tangible, energetically resilient, radiating globe of energy located in a rocky, austere region with major topological changes in elevation, shear cliffs, large outcroppings of igneous, metamorphic, and sedimentary rock. Water is not present in significant quantities. This energy phenomenon fluoresces an intense yellow-green light, and though generally spheroid in shape, fluctuates much in the way a soap bubble responds to air pressure, currents, and other forces impinging on its structure. There is a humming one senses, not hears. This globe seems to be both within the rock cavity where it is manifest, yet without it as well. It is partially surrounded by the earth, yet also partially free of the ground. It is there despite the rocks intrude yet don't. There are other people or beings associated with this globe. There is a sense that the people present are aware of, but rather indifferent to observers, that means us. they're slightly amused, like one might be amused by apes watching people at the zoo or babies thinking they understand the unspoken agendas and motivations of the adult world. The purpose here is adjusting, calibrating, sending, arranging in a physio-energetic sense. There is an impression of great but subtle power, only a portion of which is there, the rest of which is elsewhere, the tip of the iceberg analogy. Radiant, flexible, substantial are other words that describe this energy form. The beings here are, in a sense, professional, like they are completely going about their business and are disciplined or single-minded enough not to be distracted by outside irritants like us, like the cop who maintains decorum despite name-calling from bystanders. 30 more seconds. The event occurred primarily as an adjustment or maintenance mission, but had a slight element of showing off or revealing themselves, teasing with a purpose. Otherwise, it was a very minor routine sort of technical exercise, revealing a small fraction of capability. Full capability would never be revealed except in the event of extreme circumstances. Stasis, manipulation, transmutation, transportation, physical rearrangement, total reconfiguration are all capabilities. The agenda here is to manipulate the environment only enough to create the appropriate situation to satisfy the agenda, like an oil company changing the landscape, only enough to facilitate its objective, leaving the rest the same. They are not indifferent to the needs of the natives, but the needs of the natives are subordinate to the objective of these others. That is a very good professional summary from a professional remote viewer.
And what was he saying in terms of what this might have been?
All those things, all we saw was his green fireball and the glow on the, and what he's saying is there's an agency behind it, an intelligent agency behind it that's doing something there, knows that we're there, and gives us a little, you know, throws us a bone,
mm-hmm.
and that's it. Well, after that, after several years of that site and the event started to wane.
And that was 1990?
That was 1990 when he wrote the report. We had already been there earlier in the year, and then I began to take scientists to the site, where, and I have the full reports there too. But I want to jump ahead to 1994, that Ariel School event outside of Harare, Zimbabwe, where all these middle school kids were out there playing baseball, went into the savannas, and came back with this story that I've talked about on Coast to Coast before, and your listeners can look at all that. John Mack, the late John Mack, happened to be in South Africa at the time and flew up to Harare to interview these kids, and I got to see some of the original 35 millimeter. And the kids heard in their minds, 60 of them, 40 or 60, heard in their minds looking at this big bug-eyed guy and standing in front of a saucer. They think they did. That you got to take better care of your planet. Your planet's dying.
Wow.
And I said,
that's
okay,
dramatic.
I'm going to do a full court press using my all my resources on this, on the agency that orchestrated this event. Okay? And I did. And the meeting that what I want to meet with is this agency, and they are not ETs. They are what Jacques Vallée and I have both called, and John Keel, the late John Keel, ultra-terrestrials. They live on Earth.
Always did.
Excuse me. Yes, always did. If you look at the Travis Walton case, which is a real case, no BS. When we remote view that particular event, he is inside an object, and we don't use the term vehicle or craft in our work. He's inside an object, but the three or four entities that are there are wraith-like, and they're wafting through this particular object. They're almost they're not physical. They're semi-physical. In fact, I briefed at the highest levels of the Pentagon. I said, we are dealing here in many cases with what I term transcendental technologies. And many of these things emanate from a seamount, inside a seamount, to the west of Fiji, very, very deep. And I've talked about this on your show before. So we're not dealing with ETs here. Yes, extraterrestrials are involved with planet Earth. All the crop circles, the real ones that aren't fabricated by humans, are directed from an underground location on Mars. I've talked about this before. So that's ET. And, you know, we've got other things that are ET. A lot of the mining ancient, God knows how ancient they are, mining activities on the moon, that's where structures are still are present there, were done by robots that were left there to mine by an intelligent race.
Many, many years ago.
Oh, yeah. Millions, we think. Yeah. But they're gone now, and the mining stopped. There's still activity on both the moon and Mars. In fact, Paul Smith and I, for a contract, a German contract, remote viewed what shut down the Phoebus-2 spacecraft. The Russians came to me through General Stubblebine, late General Stubblebine, and said, look, what happened to Phoebus-2 on this
orbit? That was the object that the Russians had sent up, the Soviets at the time, that
Roger.
They saw something coming at it, and then it was like gobbled up or something.
Yeah, it was a big flash, and then it was gone. So Paul Smith and I particularly remote viewed the demise of that, and both our descriptions were very, very interesting. We worked independent of each other, but we both used the analogy of a guard dog that's waiting for its owners to come back, and it sees something, perceives something up there, and goes up to guide it down to the surface of Mars or under Mars, but it says, oh, it spit it out because it's not its owners, and it went back down to rest in the sands of Mars.
Now, tell me about the Sasquatch connection, though.
Yeah, it's very interesting. So at the Imago part, that part of the project, I took two photos of Sasquatch. The Patterson-Gimlin film, which that's a real thing. It's not a fake. And then the one that I posted on your website, last time I was on, of a one walking over a snow ridge in either Vancouver or near Washington State. That's real, too. So I looked at the location. I was interested in using GeoFix to look at the location, the present location of each of those, the Patterson-Gimlin object and the one in Washington. They both led to the identical site of the orchestrators of the REL school event. Both those Sasquatches, in terms of their location, ended up on that same mountain near Mount Lassen, where I had already established was a contact zone for these orchestrators of the REL school event. So I'm quite excited. I'm anticipative, and I'm not afraid because I have no idea what's going to happen, but I feel a little bit spooked, which is funny because I think that was a Shredder or Splinter and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but I am looking forward to that trip.
Well, who knows what you'll uncover in
Yeah, I don't know. Everything is almost a total unknown here, except what we put together, where, like Chaco Canyon, this agency, which is not ET and not human, and I don't know about the Sasquatches. I think they're, I'm not sure what they are. I really have to find that out. But it's a meeting place, just like Chaco Canyon was, and remote viewing had to be used to find it. Consciousness tools. Not just problem-solving tools, but higher-level, refined consciousness tools had to be able to go not after the fact, hey, what happened over here in terms of ET or whatever you want to call it. No, proactive. Okay, what are your protocols, if any, for a meeting? Now, I may not understand what happens there, but I certainly want to bring back something over the next few months that substantiates the things that I'll say if I'm still around to say them.
Ed, the New Madrid Fault, which some say is bigger than the San Andreas Fault, you're seeing some kind of activity there.
About a year and a half ago, perhaps longer, I began to look at the next catastrophic North American, both Canada and the U.S., North American events. And the key event that popped up time and again was an earthquake, and the whole Midwest being affected by this particular earthquake and the New Madrid Fault. But what particularly concerned me was the number of nuclear react power plants that are also affected and needed to be shut down. So despite the structural damages and perhaps human lives lost, and the Mississippi River perhaps shifting, you know, you've got that more serious long-term problem, the gift that keeps on giving, like Fukushima Daiichi.
Well, you know, New Madrid is St. Louis goes through there, everything goes through there, and years ago, the Mississippi went the other way when that earthquake hit. Remember that one?
Yeah.
In the 1800s?
It's changed its flow. But this time, I'm thinking that it might not just change its flow. It may actually shift.
Jeez.
Because there's a lot of places where the, you know, the levees and the built-up the Army Corps of Engineers has really constrained the river. But if those go down, the Mississippi changes its course.
Major Ed Dames with us. His websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. He also has a DVD series out called Learn Remote Viewing, and we'll talk a little bit more about some of the work that he does. People are a little concerned about an economic collapse, Ed. What does remote viewing say about that?
I had a bunch of economists in the professional, three, in the professional development course way back in 95. And they were curious as to whether there would ever be an economic collapse. So we put together a series, an ensemble of different technical remote viewing search terms and all that. And lo and behold, yes, there would be a global economic collapse. And I talked about that with Art Bell way back in 96, as well as drastic climate change, things that would force us to would not disallow us growing crops the way we have traditionally grown them. But the economic collapse, it, just like the kill shot sequences, when people said, oh, that can't happen, it's bunk, and then these massive solar flares that, thank goodness, were not Earth-directed happened. So people began to think, what I said, the unthinkable would happen. The U.S. would default on its T-bill. It's bond payments.
That's all we need. Jeez.
Yeah, and then newspapers, you know, came out. It's been about 7 years now with the same thing. The unthinkable. They actually said that the unthinkable, neologism kill shot. They adopted that idea, the unthinkable. Perhaps not listening to me, but the parallel news line said it is possible that we may default. I mean, come on, look at the. Global economic condition right now. Most of your listeners know how fragile we are economically in terms of the debt, the amount of debt the world has.
Ed, does remote viewing get involved in, political outcomes and things like that?
No, we experimented early with the elections. That's all. I have no interest. Maybe other people do, but it's very, very difficult to do things like that because you have so many people involved making decisions in those cases. But in something like a presidential election, the winner of the next presidential election, there's a number of ways to handle that. Because it's in the future, it already exists, right? Time, as we know,
exactly.
It, this idea of linear time. Yeah, it's linear, but. You and I are both dead in another time, and we're both not alive in another time, too. But those events still exist, the big events. There's a little bit of there's a lot of wiggle room and some fuzzy sets that happen around smaller events like football games and things like that I don't want to go into. But when we're looking at, for instance, in the next election, if there's a female running at the end of the election, then opposed to a male, then it's very, very easy for us to determine using indirect methods the winner of the election. We look at the runner's genitalia. It takes 15 minutes to sketch that.
Interesting take. All right, stay with us. We're going to come back and talk more with Major Ed Dames, the remote viewer, and take your phone calls as well here on Coast to Coast AM. And again, his website's linked up at coasttocoastam.com.